We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Audacy put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Audacy. Visit ads.audacy.com.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Look, I wish Aaron Rodgers and his hair the very, very best of luck this Halloween, but we cannot extend that luck to Sunday night when they're taking on the 49ers. Jimmy Garoppolo was on Rich Eisen's show and was asked about basically, do you have any idea when Trey Lance is going to come on in to play for you?
Kind of know with the situations. You know, the first game we got into the red zone and then they brought Trey in. You know, this game, like, we had plans for him to come in and it just didn't end up working out that way. And, you know, it's kind of one of those things, you got to be ready to roll. And when, you know, if he calls Trey in there, it is what it is. But can't think about it too much, I'd say.
I mean, I think it would be a bad place to think about it because we know that Kyle Shanahan runs very hot or cold on whether or not he's going to play him. And it seems to be not a real script that he has set up, but more of like a gut feeling that it's the right time to do it or not to do it. So how Jimmy could be prepared for what he thinks Kyle will, you know, have get his spidey senses tingling that it's time to put Trey Lance in. It's hard to prepare for that. So you just kind of jog off the field when you see the other guy jogging on the field. Jimmy Garoppolo, how he deals with pressure.
You know, not even just quarterback. I think every position should be evaluated that way. You know, nice. As coaches, they're always looking to, you know, improve and can we make things better in this situation? And I think every position kind of has that. And that's the competition of the sport that I think brings out the best in everyone. So whenever you got, you know, a situation like this, or there's a million different situations, everyone kind of has their own story. But just any type of competition, I truly believe it brings out the best in everyone.
I mean, the guy has stuck the landing on every single public answer on this thing. He really has.
And look, some of them are probably tricky. I think he's just being honest there.
Yeah.
Like,
well,
football is a competition sport. You're fighting to keep your spot on the depth chart all the time, unless you're Aaron Rodgers and Tom Brady, basically.
Well, Pete Carroll was famous at USC for Competition Wednesdays, where you basically were allowed to challenge someone for their spot. Like the movie Drumline.
It's kind of the essence of the sport in a lot of ways.
It really is. They say that the hardest game that Alabama plays every week is that full contact Wednesday practice when guys are battling for positions. And the inner squad Alabama practice is harder than every game they play.
In the few positions where Alabama hasn't already got an All-American. So I don't know that there's a whole lot of competition that happens on Competition Wednesdays there.
Well, except
Alabama?
There's another All-American coming behind
you,
right?
There's nothing but younger four-star recruits behind you, plus now transfer portals where best players are walking away from other SEC programs to like be free agents for Alabama.
But those are things that Nick Saban has sorted out by now. He's got his 22 for the most part. And if he's got a weakness at one place, he's already made those decisions. There might be Competition Wednesdays in other places, but Alabama is based largely not only on the fact they have a ton of talent, but that Nick Saban has sorted out what that talent is and where they rank in his head.
That's really beside the point, though, because even there, even if everything you just said is true, if someone starts playing poorly, there's somebody really good waiting in the wings. And I think certainly that's the case for most positions on most NFL teams, other than where you have legitimate, well-established stars. So, you know, I think Jimmy Garoppolo, for all the quarterbacking critiques and stuff we want to give him, there's no question that he is tough-minded off the field and tough as nails on the field. For all the things you can criticize, no one is going to say that that guy doesn't have the right mindset to be an NFL quarterback, and no one's going to say he doesn't have the toughness to be an NFL quarterback. So hearing him talk about it this way does not surprise me at all.
888-957-9570. David, San Jose, what's going on?
Hello?
David, what do you got?
This is Dave. Hey, this is David, longtime caller. Thanks for taking me. I was just going back to the Aaron Rodgers thing. I believe totally in prepping for Halloween costumes. I'm growing out my full beard right now. I'm going to shave half of my face to be Two-Face from Joker.
Oh, nice.
Are you
Tommy Lee Jones Two-Face or like a different generation of Two-Face?
Probably didn't need a follow-up question, but here we are.
I'm going to try to get in the theme with the two and kind of go Two-Face and have two different personalities too that night.
Wow.
Oh, you're going to stay in character.
I like it. Method actor.
Yeah. That's the most annoying Halloween party invitee, by the way. The I'm in costume, and therefore, tonight I'm Genghis Khan.
Could you stop being the Penguin, for God's sakes? For 1 minute, can I have a serious conversation with you?
Look, you're not Burgess Meredith. You're not Danny DeVito. Give us a break. I just asked you, do you want another margarita?
Stop poking me with that cane.
See, this is the fun you miss out on Halloween,
oh,
right?
God. You guys have enough time on your hands to make up for another lifetime.
You know what we're going to do? And we did it last year in the age of COVID because we have a staircase in front of our house.
You told me about this. Yeah, the candy tube.
The candy tube is coming back because the candy tube was just a hit
with
the kids. Stick out your bag under the tube. I grab a handful of, you know, bite size whatevers, and I just start whipping them down the tube, and the kid just sits there, and it comes out of the chute, they love it.
Once again, necessity, the mother of invention.
It really is.
I like that.
We even put like little lights around the tube. Like, it's right on the side, it says candy tube.
Oh, nice.
I really like that.
You know what? We got stairs in the front of the house, too. I might steal your candy tube.
Do the candy tube. It is a hit. It's a hit with the kids. And parents, thank you for it.
Yeah.
And you get one thick enough to where we also keep a cooler of beer on the fridge. And if I see a dad or mom who's light in the beer hand, we'll slip them down a beer through the tube.
Now you're really popular in the neighborhood.
Yeah, that's called the drinking tube.
See, I'd make the tube bigger and just shoot bricks down there.
Then it wouldn't be a candy tube at all,
no,
right?
It wouldn't. But I don't have spirit.
Tube of pain.
The part about Halloween that is underrated is trick.
We need to give your address out at some point. Then,
that's
don't
a
we?
Drop. The part of Halloween that's underrated is a trick. It's a classic Rayism, right?
We don't have stairs that lead to our house.
So. He just throws the brick straight out the front door.
Yeah,
just right at the children.
In the good old days, it was hot oil from the roof,
dodging bricks. Speaking of dodging bricks. This is, I mean, how the hell am I supposed to transition from this? I'll just say, speaking
of... If you can dodge a brick, you can dodge a ball.
You can dodge your Halloween candy.
What a segue!
So, where did that come from?
That's Nick Friedell.
Okay. Front Office Sports, AJ Perez. The NFL has a little brick maybe being thrown at it that it's going to try to dodge here. Or at least if Stan Kroenke was going to get all like uppity about what he was or wasn't going to do with the city of St. Louis, the other NFL owners now who could be involved in this might ask him to do something other than the original plan. Let me just catch everybody up real fast, because unless there's a settlement over the next few weeks, Los Angeles Rams owner Stan Kroenke could be facing a jury trial that could lead to hundreds of millions, if not multiple billions of dollars, over damages the Rams' 2016 move inflicted on St. Louis. On September 13th, a judge denied a bid by defendants to dismiss this case ahead of a January 10th, 2022 trial date. So a pre-trial hearing is going to be scheduled. Sports attorney David Wallach told Front Office Sports that the judge denying summary judgment will likely serve as a come-to-Jesus moment for the NFL, because a $1 billion figure could be the starting point for the city of St. Louis to settle And if it actually goes to a jury trial, multiple billions of dollars, even said maybe even up to $10 billion, which is basically what Stan Kroenke and or his wife, who's also part of the Walmart fortune, is really actually worth. And how much money would you be upside down while you're paying off SoFi and you got to give St. Louis all that cash too? So let me go a little bit deeper here, Ray. I can feel you chomping at the bit. So the Rams increased valuation from $1.45 billion in 2015 to its current valuation of nearly $5 billion is something that will be considered. The plaintiffs claim that city, county, and state have lost more than $100 million in hotel property tax, sales tax, and ticket tax revenues since the Rams left town, and they're accusing the NFL of violating its own relocation rules. And if the judge allows a jury to consider the valuation increase along with a $550 million relocation fee, punitive damages, multiplied damages as a deterrent, again, it could surpass $10 billion. Now, I tell you all that to tell you what happened today, because the price of poker went up today. A Missouri Supreme Court rejects the NFL and Stan Kroenke's request to stop release of private finances. Lawyers for Kroenke and the league asked the court to block a St. Louis circuit judge's order requiring them to turn over their finances. The information could be used for a jury to consider the amount of punitive damages. If the Rams and NFL do lose this lawsuit, it could mean that we get to learn more about Kroenke's financial portfolio, which includes other sports franchises, management groups, a winery, and other businesses, as well as his wife, who is a multi-billionaire heir to the Walmart fortune. Her name is Ann Walton Kroenke, and her financial dealings. Forbes estimates their combined net worth to be over $10.7 billion. The suit filed by St. Louis and the St. Louis Regional Convention and Sports Complex Authority claims that the NFL violated its own relocation rules by allowing the Rams to leave St. Louis. They reportedly are seeking over $1 billion in damages, and trial is scheduled to begin in January. This is good. The NFL is going to settle this. Other owners are going to tell Stan, bite your lip, mail them $3 billion, and do away with this once and for all.
No, the owner who's going to do that is Jerry Jones, who is the guy who put Stan Kroenke in L.A. And Jerry Jones is going to go, you're now messing with my money. And as much as I got you here and I helped you get that stadium, you're going to make this go away. And if Jerry Jones can't get Kroenke to do it, then, yeah, Armageddon comes. And I'm rooting for that. I hope Jerry fails on this. I hope they have to put all their stuff out in the street.
Wouldn't that be incredible?
Oh, God. Now you want to talk about Halloween? That's the treat we all want.
You're going to go as an accountant?
But Jerry Jones has throw weight that Roger Goodell doesn't and that no other owner has. He's the one who's going to be either tasked with or volunteer to go up to Stan and say, make this go away. Make this go away now.
Yeah, and I got to say, there's no way he and his wife are only worth 10.7.
I think no way,
because just quickly, Kroenke Sports and Entertainment owns the majority, at the very least, of Arsenal FC and their minor league team, the Rams, the Nuggets, the Avalanche, the Rapids, the Colorado Mammoth of the National Lacrosse League, the Los Angeles Gladiators of the Overwatch League, and the newly formed Los Angeles Gorillas of the Call of Duty League. Granted, those video game teams are not worth all that much, but that plus the Walton inheritance is clearly more than 10.7, but like, there's no question.
Okay,
if he has to show, like, we're going to know exactly how much it is.
I believe that when Forbes puts out its list every year of the 400 billionaires or, you know, worst skivers in the history of the planet list that they put out every year, that Ann Kroenke's money is separate from Stan's. And they probably do that for tax purposes.
So maybe the 10 is just him.
I think the 10 is just him.
Okay, that could be, because I think some of that is held in his wife's name, too. And you're right, they probably do all sorts of weird stuff to cheat taxes.
If you find out how they commingle their finances, now you get into tax ramifications, too.
It's just, it's a level of disclosure. There's no way the NFL, even if it believes it's right in its decisions, can risk. There's just no way.
Please, dear Jesus.
Yeah, but there's no way it's going to happen, and you're right. It's probably going to be Jerry Jones saying, Stan, doesn't matter what you want to do. Doesn't matter what your lawyers are telling you. I'm telling you, this doesn't see the day of light. Or the light of day.
Either.
Or the day of light.
Yeah. No, I think, yeah, it's why the NFL spent so much lawyer money trying to get the venue changed from the start, and it never happened. And the fact that it stayed in Missouri put them at a disadvantage. And Michael McCann of Sports, or who used to be at Sports Illustrated, who was their legal expert, said this at the time: not being able to get a venue change puts the NFL in a very awkward box.
Oh,
and now
yeah.
we're seeing the dimensions and the spikes inside the box.
Yeah. I mean, the city of St. Louis is probably going to be leaning towards the city of St. Louis. having said all that, I guess it's time to bring this up this afternoon. Oakland A's ownership really hates its fans. I mean, there's just no other way to say it. They continue to mock A's fan loyalty. And the latest slap in the face is that a team that hasn't drawn 5,000 fans to any single game on this homestand has decided, coming out of the age of COVID, that it's going to be raising ticket prices as it dangles the constant threat of relocating over every single person's head. And that, to me, as I tweeted earlier today, is essentially the plot of Major League. When the owner wanted to ruin her team's standing so much in her own town that Major League Baseball would have no recourse but to allow the Cleveland Indians to move to another state that would be more bountiful in the long run. That is the plot of Major League. And I really believe that we are looking at the plot of Major League being run by John Fisher and Dave Cavill. And it's happening, and it's a spit in everyone's eye.
Yeah, it's also the plot of Slapshot.
Yes.
Except where the two movies diverge is in Slapshot, the owner won. In Major League Baseball, the owner didn't.
In Major League, and this is important, the entire premise is based on she has an offer in Miami to move the team.
Yeah.
A's are doing it with nowhere to go. What are you thinking?
They're trying to create leverage where leverage does not exist. And if it does exist, it's made itself incredibly hard to find. Because of the cities that they've talked to, most have shown very little interest in shoveling money at a ballpark for them. Because that's what they would be moving for. And the one place that people keep bringing up, which is Nevada, they already got scammed on that a few years ago. And they're very disinclined to do it again, not to mention the fact that Henderson, Nevada is about 20 minutes away from the Strip.
Or Summerland.
Wherever they're planning to put this is, you know, it's away from the one thing where the money is. And there's never been a stadium or arena ever built anywhere away from the money that has survived.
And by the way, football for sure, to a lesser extent, hockey, or if they moved, or the WNBA, like there's one or two or three games a week, and filling a significant portion of the stadium with tourists who make up a lot of the purchase power in Las Vegas is reasonable. You need a home fan base to fill a baseball stadium, and like unless the plan is to drastically change the way you do business, it's not like when you get the stadium there, all of a sudden it's going to be full and you're going to have all these fans, and then you're going to make the money that you say you need to make in order to actually spend money on your team and getting better and acquiring free agents and keeping your own players who are any good, right? Like, unless you change everything, no one's coming, ever.
More than anything else, baseball's an outdoor sport. Las Vegas is an indoor town. Unless you're talking about laying by the pool. Also, whatever gold mine was waiting for the A's to get to Vegas, they waited too long to really get the gumption to try and fire that up. For the A's to try to be the third professional team into that city is nothing short of hysterical at this point, because they've never done well against the competition.
And what would be really galling to me if I wasn't like a diehard A's fan who's been with this team through thick and thin over the last 10, 20 years is the fans have shown over and over again that if you try, they will come. That ballpark fills up and gets as crazy as any in baseball for a good team trying to compete, for a team in the playoffs. Like, that's real. There's evidence. Repeatedly, as the team has torn itself apart and built itself back up, the fans have come back when they show that they're actually in this thing, and they're basically saying, we don't care, screw you.
No, they've never cared, because this was a real estate deal from the start. I mean, that's what they've been looking for throughout all the cities that they said, we want you to have us. And all those cities basically said, no. They basically just said, no thanks. We'd rather not have Major League Baseball. Either we don't have the infrastructure for it, or you don't have the interest to make it worth our while politically to do it. And Henderson, Nevada is among those cities. Portland talks a good game, but you know where their stadium would be? Out in southwest corner of Portland, which is where there's suburbs and not much else. Downtown Portland is built out. So there's no place for them to go right now. So this cheap provocation of jacking up prices for a diminishing number of people is essentially trying to poison a well when you don't have an alternate source of water.
It's really odd, and it seems like every single action is either being made in bad faith, a direct spit in your eye, or it's a total non-starter to begin with. And that encapsulates every single element of them trying to move and trying to stay and how they deal with their own fans. On that note, we do have a final. From San Diego, the San Francisco Giants have lost to the Padres as the Los Angeles Dodgers go to extra innings and find a win. In extra innings, the Giants found a loss today, and we are back to one game separating the Giants and the Dodgers in the National League West. Ray is giddy.
163, baby. That's all I want.
It would be amazing if that happened. It would be amazing. It would be a home game for San Francisco. Today, the thing that you might have expected the least to happen, happened. Yesterday, we talked to Bruce Bochy. Kolsky asked him about how great Logan Webb has been this year, and here's what Bruce Bochy had to say about Logan Webb.
I love Logan Webb. I love Logan when he came up with us. I mean, I don't know how you don't like the guy that can throw a 94, 95 mile an hour sinker with that kind of movement. He's got a slider and he's got a devastating changeup. I mean, it's a wipeout changeup. And now he's got command of it. And, you know, part of this game, this getting that competitive edge, you know, this guy, once he felt that sense of belonging, this is what you're going to see. He should be a horse for a while. I mean, I guarantee when hitters face him, they go, oh, geez. I mean, he's got both sides of plate cover with movement, with the slider and the sinker running in. He's got that changeup. I mean, it's like playing wiffle ball with velocity.
So in just about every instance that Logan Webb has pitched in the second half, Bruce Bochy's nailed it until today. Logan Webb lasted four innings. He gave up four runs on four hits, all of them earned. He walked two. He struck out three. 78 pitches with only 44 strikes to get through four innings. Logan Webb was a mess, and the Padres scored four in the bottom of the first. The Giants climbed right back into the game with a two-run second. and then jumped ahead in the game with a three-run sixth, only to see the Padres put two up in the sixth. The Giants answered with one more in the seventh, and in the bottom of the tenth, a Dominic Leon, was it? Well, you get
it, it was a ground ball to La Stella that he barely got to and threw wide of home plate.
Yeah, and the seeing eye single sent Dominic Leon as today's losing pitcher, but it was really a struggling Brandon Webb, which kind of dug the hole that even though they jumped out of it, it haunted them for the rest of the day. A final in 10 innings, San Diego 7, Giants 6. They remain on 99 wins.
I want to present an alternate take on today's Logan Webb outing. Ugly first inning, obviously, but to watch it, he walked a couple guys, had an unlucky hit by pitch that like barely nicked someone's back leg.
Wild pitch.
Yeah, there was a sort of a seeing eye flying duck single involved. Like, it wasn't as bad as a four-run, nine-hitter inning sounds like it should be. And it seemed like he locked in after that. I think actually the mistake here was pulling him for a pinch hitter in the fifth because Quintana was no good.
Yeah, back-to-back homers is never a good thing. But I believe it's the highest scoring inning he's had all year.
Yeah, and it wasn't like they were crushing it all over the place. There was some bad luck, a couple close pitches that missed involved in that. So I'm not panicking.
Here's how it ended.
Bertini on the ground, diving. La Stella is going to fire home, but not in time. Padres win. They salvage a game in the series. They beat the Giants 7-6 in 10 innings. And the lead is back to just one in the National League West.
And that's because Dave Fleming on NBC Sports Bay Area, Max Muncy, hit a two-run extra inning home run in Colorado for a 7-5 10-inning win for the Dodgers. That, by the way, happened exactly as the Giants were tying the game up in San Diego. Watching both games kind of on TV here was pretty interesting, matching runs within the same 10-second frame there. But it turns out Dodgers win, Giants lose, and the lead is back down to one. Hold on to your hat. This is going to be an incredible 9-game stretch to end the year.
It better be, damn it.
It is. It has been, Ray. Like, even if one team pulled away a little right now, the baseball season's not ruined. It's been amazing.
Strong.
It's been amazing.
Don't set us up for this and then have somebody win by 5.
That's going to be tough to do with 9 games remaining.
Not really. Giants could easily do that. Giants could win by 8.
Again, if you feel an 8-game Dodger losing streak coming on, you got to bet on that, man.
Yeah, that's true. You could make a lot of money.
I could win the Alameda County Fair.
Would you like to hear what Max Muncy is doing with runners in scoring position this year?
Probably enough to not want to pitch to him.
Just 345 with a 1,159 OPS.
Just another guy the A's couldn't use.
That's a tough one.
So you were saying there was a strategy debate issue. Again, we were hosting a radio show, couldn't pay close attention to it. What happened today, Lucas?
Top 10. Tie game, obviously, and the Giants don't score a run. So you go into the bottom of the 10th, and eventually you get to second and third, one out, with Victor Caratini up at the plate. And, you know, you could walk him, load the bases, and allow yourself a chance at a double play to get out of the inning unscathed. Instead, Leon and Kapler decided to throw to Caratini, and it was a chopper right up the middle where, if you put him on base, and the next batter was Will Myers was on deck. If Caratini was walked and that at bat happened with Will Myers, it's a double play. You're out of the inning and you're on to the 11th.
Well, if fifths were fifths, we'd all be drunk.
But why wouldn't you though, right?
Yeah, it seems like you would probably want to get the double play set up right there.
Except that Will Myers is a much, much better hitter than Victor Caratini.
But you're gonna have to face him anyway.
No, you're gonna walk Caratini and you're gonna pinch him. Caratini is already in the game.
Yeah. So right.
So they walk Caratini and you face Myers anyway.
Well, I understand they face Myers anyway, but facing him with one out and expecting him to ground into a double play, a guy with a relatively big bat at that point can just hit a sac fly.
And a fly ball hitter.
Whereas if you get Caratini, a 215 hitter, out, then Will Myers comes up with two outs and a sac fly does not win the ball game. So
that's the other side, yeah.
Yeah, I'm fine with the decision.
Yeah. The Giants are not dangerously in first place because they make bad choices. You know, that's called baseball. That's one of those, well, we were going to do it this way, we decided to do it that way, and it blew up. Now, you could have said, well, it would have set up a force out at home plate, which means it would have been a much easier throw for LaStella, but LaStella did a hell of a job just getting to that ball and then came up all wonky.
I'm not sure that would have been a double play, to be honest. It was moving slow enough. I don't know that it would have worked, and it certainly wasn't in time to get a force out at home. So I'm not sure. You know, it's 6 of 1, half dozen of the other. I can't complain about that decision.
Kapler must be fired.
What a disaster.
Again, my criticism would be of the decision to put our guy, Alex Dickerson, welcome back to the squad, in as a pinch hitter. Not because it was him, but because Logan Webb had really settled down. He was only at 78 pitches, and I'd have let him go 5 or 6 if he could have made it.
I wonder if knowing that leaving Kazmir in a little longer last night was maybe a bad choice. And it was, you know, because Kazmir, he had worked four shutout innings before his spot was due up in the top of the fifth, and Kapler rolled with him. And then it was walk, hit, walk, and of course the Giants came back to win that game.
But I would suggest, with all due respect, that Logan Webb has earned more rope than Scott Kazmir.
No doubt about it. No doubt about it. But putting the fate of the team in the hands of the bullpen has worked many, many times, and today it didn't. It's just that simple. The Giants used 6 pitchers after getting Webb pulled, and yeah, Quintana probably shouldn't be put in another leverage situation again this year.
And the thing is, too, like, and I'm not looking at the box score, I'm pulling it up right now, but part of the reason that the bullpen wasn't as good today as it has been most of the season is, my guess is because presumably, since they didn't come in, neither Watson nor Rogers were available because of recent aggressive usage. So knowing that you didn't have your two best guys, I think I would have given Logan Webb the benefit of the doubt and a little more
right.
rope.
For those of you who don't know, McGee is dealing with a little soreness right now, so he wasn't available.
Right. So, you know, the relievers were Quintana, Littell, Alvarez, Castro, Garcia, Leone. And if you could have done it without Quintana, you'd have been in better shape.
Yeah, their last three games, it's 6 relievers, 5 relievers, 6 relievers.
It's a lot.
And the one thing about Gabe Kapler that is true in all situations is, when in doubt, he throws in a new arm. That is a little bit of the sort of the Tampa Bay thinking that is increasingly starting to be used by managers around baseball, which is, don't be afraid to empty out your bullpen.
Camilo Duvall, was he available today, or did he just decide we're not going to use him because we asked him to pitch last night? It's not like he had to work too much last night. He struck out Machado and then rolled Tommy Pham into a double play.
Mm. Yeah,
Duvall's a guy I want to see out there a little bit more than we do.
My guess is he wasn't available today either.
I guess.
Because they used him, 3 out of the last 4 games before that, I want to say. Let me ask you this. Jake McGee's been really good. Tyler Rogers has been excellent. Would you consider Duvall as a potential closer in the playoffs? Because I think I would.
He's got the stuff, clearly.
And he's been completely lights out since his most recent call up, like around a month ago.
I still think you're erring on the experience of McGee than the heat check of Duvall. But I'm much more confident with either of them than I am Jose Quintana pitching. Yeah, and Duvall was used Sunday, Tuesday, Wednesday.
Yeah, no doubt. And look, Jake McGee has done a really good job, so this is not to diss him, but Camilo Duvall has pitched in 9 games since he was called back to the team on September 5th. He has thrown 8 1/3 innings, allowed 3 hits, struck out 9, no runs, a 111 batting average, and I guess his whip would be about 0.74. So unhittably awesome is what he's been. Now, look, it's 9 games, but it's the month of September, and boy, he looks like the sort of guy who should be able to really do that level of damage with that stuff.
Kapler is talking about him in terms of, I want to test him more. I want him to feel discomfort on the mound, and I want to see him succeed in those moments. Maybe he is setting him up for a larger role in the postseason than he's been able to play in the regular season.
And do we even know if McGee is going to be available?
I don't think we know that yet. But the other thing is, if he does fall in love with Doval, it doesn't necessarily mean he's got to make him the closer. You just put him in the highest leverage situation that comes to you.
That's fair.
Maybe the game is decided in the sixth.
And that's one of the great things about the way that the bullpen's been used this year is, like, I think everyone would pretty much be okay with being shuffled around a little bit because they've been shuffled around a little bit all year.
Yeah.
I mean, they're averaging 5 pitching changes a game in the last 10 days.
And look, when it comes to the postseason, every inning's the 9th inning. All of them. They're all 9th innings.
So, I mean, Doval as the closer almost means nothing unless the closer is the guy you need at that moment. And the moment might be in the 5th. The moment might be in the 7th. I mean, Madison Bumgarner made his reputation for all time because Game 7, the game was decided in the 5th inning.
Look, I saved it to the end here of our long segment because I didn't want to go down the path that we went down for a couple hours to begin today's show, and that is just, what are the Golden State Warriors supposed to do with Andrew Wiggins? Andrew Wiggins remains unvaccinated, and what are the Warriors to do with a player whose decision, and if he stands in it, will render him unavailable for home games? I mean, that's an untenable situation for any athlete to play in. I only play road games. That can't happen. So what are the Warriors to do? What mechanisms would they have to either convince Wiggins that the vaccination is the right and just thing to do, or to pivot away from a man who has rendered himself unavailable for 41 home dates? I don't know what we're supposed to see from the Warriors, who apparently have tried to put Wiggins in front of respectable doctors who are African-American, who are convincing him this isn't about, like, Whitey trying to get you or anything like that. It's an incredibly difficult situation that Joe Lacob and this team's front office could find itself in, and how they remedy it, I don't know, because we've never quite run an experiment like this in the history of sport, have we?
Well, this experiment, all of it is new. I mean, the NHL has done it by basically saying, well, if you don't get a shot, you don't get to play. The NBA, I don't think, has worked this out because I don't think they've sat down often enough with the Players Association to work out a strategy that everybody will be happy with. And I think we've seen in the past that the players' union doesn't basically just declare a fiat that all players follow.
No, but
there's so many moving parts to this that I think the only way to find a solution, even if it's a lousy one, is for the Warriors to basically just say, well, then you can't come to camp. You're still not vaccinated, you can't play, and then let's take it to an arbitrator and find out what we're entitled to do and what we're not.
Okay, so a couple things. First of all, you're right about the Players Association, but 90% of the players are vaccinated. This was just a report a couple hours ago.
Shams.
90%. That seems like such an overwhelming majority of the union that they should be able to get behind some kind of mandate for the entire league. Like, I would think even if half of those are guys who don't want to force anyone else, it's still overwhelming support for getting the vaccine. And look, I think the reality of it is this. if Andrew Wiggins does not get vaccinated, there is no good solution. Because anything we've come up with over the course of the day, Warriors fining him, trying to void his contract, but trying to trade him for pennies on the dot, there is no good workable solution to this other than Andrew Wiggins getting vaccinated.
Monty Poole has just tweeted that Andrew Wiggins has been in the Bay Area this month, but is restricted to individual sessions at Chase Center. And under current San Francisco protocols, if he isn't fully vaccinated over the next 20 days, those workouts will end.
And again, that's a San Francisco rule. That's not some Warriors decree or NBA or anything like that. It's the city of San Francisco.
When we come on back, the Warriors certainly have something to think about. We will have something to think about on the Thinking Man's Thursday. And I want you every single Monday from 6 to 7 to tune into the Football Hour with Sean Salisbury and Lorenzo Neal, a jam-packed hour of football from two former NFL players presented by Livermore Casino, located on 1st Street in Livermore, offering Vegas-style blackjack, three-card poker, baccarat, and Texas Hold'em, the Tri-Valley's place to play in downtown Livermore. Of course, play responsibly.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.
Damon, Ratto, and Kolsky continues on 95.7 The Game.
Last night it was a Giants win and a Dodgers loss that gave them a two-game lead. Well, an extra-inning Dodger win and an extra-inning Giant loss today has that lead down to one. And needless to say, this is a situation that deserves monitoring, so we will be paying close attention to it. As we keep on going tomorrow, these two teams have mirror-for-mirror schedules the rest of the way. One more day off on Monday, I believe, for the Giants and the Dodgers, and otherwise they're playing directly not against each other, but on the same days the rest of the way in a nine-game sprint for all the NL West marbles is coming up. We have to get off off air soon enough because I Am Listening is coming up next. Odyssey's fifth annual I Am Listening special, continuing a year-round commitment to destigmatizing conversations about mental health. It's a two-hour event starting at 6 o'clock tonight. Billie Eilish, Imagine Dragons, Lizzo, Doja Cat, Zach Williams, who is the son of Robin Williams, Justin Bieber, Darius Rucker, it's Hootie from The Blowfish, Demi Lovato, and Seth Payne, many more. I Am Listening is coming up at 6 o'clock here on 95.7 The Game. In the meantime, we have things to think about.
It is time to think. Thinking Man's Thursday starts now with Damon, Ratto, and Kolsky.
It's better every time.
It's just so ridiculous.
Well, I mean, The Crown won so many Emmys. It's clearly why. It's just British.
Yeah, it's good that we spent the money to get Tobias Menzies. They just do
wasn't that,
that
nice of that, him stopping on by. All right, Lucas, what are we thinking about? We have 2 minutes.
We may only have time for one story. Would you rather go with Super Mario or quarterbacks?
I'd rather go with quarterbacks.
Yeah, quarterbacks for the sake of the format of the station.
Boomer Esiason went on WEEI, I believe it was 2 days ago, and said that if we had a redraft of the 2021 NFL draft, Mac Jones would go number one overall. What do you think about that?
I think I'm not sure which is dumber. Him suggesting a redraft 2 games into the season, or him suggesting that 2 games of Mac Jones playing well for the Patriots would totally invalidate everything every team thought about the other quarterbacks in the draft. But they're both very stupid.
Here's the deal. Zach Wilson wouldn't go number two overall. I'd give you that much based on what we've seen so far. But the Jets have a way of ruining lives, careers, and quarterbacks all the time. I still think Trevor Lawrence, based on who he was, what he accomplished, is going number one overall.
For sure.
But Mac Jones might have been, picked by the 49ers. So
Except we haven't seen Trey Lance or Justin Fields on an NFL field yet. Like, how do you say that
right.
when you haven't even seen two of the guys who went ahead of him? It's just dumb. Sorry,
Boomer. It's what happens on a slow news day.
Yeah.
I mean, somebody asks a question of Boomer Esiason, and he's too polite to say, that's the dumbest thing I've ever heard. Try something else.
Yeah. I mean, look, it's way too early. As are any and all, like, do you think that right now Derek Carr is your clubhouse leader for MVP? Look, he's having a smashing start to a season, and that's all it is. If you're having an MVP conversation at this point in time of the year, it's like getting to Valentine's Day in February and putting together your Christmas list. You're a little ahead of yourself.
It's like telling your boss, I don't have any ideas, I'm going to do this. And the fact that the guy comes out and says, let's redo the 2021 draft, and doesn't get strangled by his boss for pitching that as a question, it's one of the reasons why America is dying as a concept.
For the record, relevant to your point, Damon, Derek Carr through two games of last season had completed 50 of 68 passes, 73.5% completion rate, 523 yards, 4 touchdowns, no picks. His rating was 115, and we all know...
He
did not win the MVP.
Yeah. He came in incredibly close, but the Raiders did the one thing they do every year, which is play games in December. Look, and that's when they die.
And it's not to diss Derek Carr. It's just to point out how absurd that sort of statement is at this point in the season and the careers of those young quarterbacks.
It'd be like giving the sack title to Nick Bosa right now, even though he doesn't lead the NFL in sacks. We're getting a little ahead of ourselves. Yeah, after one game, Chandler Jones is a front runner for defensive MVP. Oh, thank you. And he did nothing the next week. I appreciate you tuning in today. We want to thank Nick Friedell for joining us. Big Friday coming up tomorrow as we get you ready for 49ers and Packers. For Ray, for Matt, I'm Damon. Thanks to the studio. Sports don't build character. They reveal it.
And like that, he's gone.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.